I think that's the key to being in right relations. Where our heart is, what our intention is, where our attention is going. For me, right relations means communicating in an authentic and kind manner with a compassionate curiosity for other perspectives and a willingness to be changed by the interaction. Here at this fellowship, we have covenanted to interact with each other with integrity and respect. To be in integrity, we have to know where we are, what promises we've made, and how we're living up to them. Know when we're able to keep them and when we need to attend to another need, a need inside ourselves. To offer respect, we have to remember the inherent worth and dignity of all people, especially the ones with whom we disagree. We read this promise in the summary of the covenant of right relations earlier in the service. And some of you may have been surprised to see that the first promise is how you are in relationship to yourself. It's important to attend to your needs. It's important to check in with yourself, to reflect, in what place is my heart? And we practiced doing that here after reading the covenant. I invited you to reflect on what came up for you, what feelings you noticed. Taking time to attend to ourselves is vitally important. Too often we run roughshod over our feelings, over our needs, in order to get on with whatever it is that needs to be done. Our culture tells us that's what we need to do. Be productive. There's a popular reminder that we are human beings, not human doings. It's popular because we need reminding. Now, our feelings are important. They're important to us because they're barometers about what's going on internally. And, of course, what's going on internally affects how we interact externally with our sisters and brothers in all the domains of our lives. You all know this. When you're tired or angry or sad, you're not at your best when interacting with others. And alternatively, when you're grounded, centered, and calm, you can handle even a challenging situation with grace and kindness. So it's important to attend to your heart. How is it with your heart? What feelings are alive in you? This practice is central to something called compassionate communication or nonviolent communication, which is often abbreviated NVC. And I know that many of you have had some experience with this through workshops that have been offered here at the fellowship. And it is one of my central spiritual practices. Many people, including me, at their initial exposure to nonviolent communication, perceive it to be primarily a set of techniques or a formula. But that is a minor part. It's really a consciousness, a mindset, a way of being. And the formula is there only to support us in getting into that consciousness. And central to that consciousness is attending to universal human needs, my own and other people's. And I say universal because I believe that we all share the same fundamental needs and values. Of course, some of these are obvious. We all need food, shelter, safety. But we also all need things like to matter, to contribute, to belong. We all have the need for fun, for ease, for comfort, and many more. Attending to our feelings, noticing in what place is my heart, is key to understanding which needs of mine I am meeting and which I am not meeting, what values I am honoring and which I am not honoring. Now, we have a default belief in our culture that our feelings are a result of external circumstances. If something bad happens, then we feel bad. If something good happens, then we feel good. But if we stop to reflect for a moment, we can see that that's not true, because the same circumstances can elicit very different feelings based on which needs are primary in a moment. So, for example, if I'm driving along and someone pulls in front of me at a very high speed, coming very close to my car, a behavior that we might call cutting me off. There are times this could happen, and I would feel really frustrated because I have a high need for efficiency, perhaps because I have not planned well and I am late. Another time, this very same thing might happen, and I might feel really hurt and sad because I'm having a tender day and I really need understanding and consideration. Another day, this very same thing might happen, and I might actually feel grateful and fulfilled because I have a need for contribution. And this person is clearly in a hurry, and I can just slow down and let them go. Does this make sense here in the Rogue Valley? I'm from Massachusetts, where everybody gets this example. But here, everyone seems to be so nice and considerate when they drive. But I think you guys can get it, yes? Now, many people hearing the phrase nonviolent communication wonder, well, wait a minute, what's violent communication? Isn't communication an alternative to violence? My primary teacher about nonviolent communication, Mickey Cashtan, describes violence in this perhaps broader way than we normally think about it. Violence is people acting in ways that compromise the emotional, physical, social, or spiritual safety of others. Violence involves losing one's awareness of other people's humanity, and this leads people to act in ways that they would not otherwise choose. So nonviolent communication means we maintain our awareness of other people's humanity, and that is central to us as Unitarian Universalists who affirm the inherent worth and dignity of all people, including our own inherent worth and dignity. So I ask you to consider, with whom do you use the most violent communication most frequently? I'm guessing it's yourself, maybe. For me, it's myself. Is anyone familiar with questions like these? How could I be so stupid? What an idiot! Why did I do that? What is wrong with me? This last one sums it up pretty well. What is wrong with me? There's an assumption that I should be another way, that I should have done something different. There is a right way, and I chose the wrong way. Well, the poet Rumi tells us, out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. Beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field of freedom, a field where it's safe to explore without violent condemnation, where there is emotional, physical, social, and spiritual safety. Instead of asking, why did I do that, with the subtext of what is wrong with me, we can ask, why did I do that? With genuine curiosity and compassion, we could consider, what needs was I meeting? What values was I honoring? And honestly and kindly look at what needs I was not meeting and what needs I was not honoring. So how does this work? Okay, here's a small example from this weekend. Right over here, I was talking with Louise while leaving my office with this robe in my hand over my arms, going to perform a wedding. And I look down and I see some keys on the floor that was very confusing because they were not my keys. So I'm confused, and then I'm suddenly embarrassed because I know where those keys were. Louise says, oh, I know, those must be Harriet's keys. She lost them. Where were they? Well, they were in my pocket since last Sunday, where I hadn't thought about them since someone handed them to me Sunday afternoon before the forum. I don't remember who. So my first reaction was to not tell Louise where they had been. Then I realized that's probably out of integrity. So I told her, and I felt embarrassed, but she was very gracious, made jokes, took the keys, promised to call Harriet, and sent me to my wedding. And so as I'm walking down the very small hall to the back door, I'm thinking, oh my God, what is wrong with me? How could I have done that? And then I remembered this sermon, and I thought, oh, wait a minute. I have to stop and ask that question, how could I have done that? What needs was I not attending to? Because that was what was present for me, what I hadn't done right. So what needs was I not attending to that had me feel this regret and embarrassment? Well, I felt regret because of this lack of consideration for the poor person who had lost their keys. and from a lack of integrity, because I think there was an implicit commitment that I would do something with those keys when I accepted them from the person who handed them to me. And then embarrassment came from my natural desire for the high regard of people I care about. Louise, Harriet, all of you. So that's what I wasn't attending to. But what needs was I attending to that had me neglect those others? Well, I was meeting a need for integrity, I imagine, by attending to what was before me in that moment, probably something about the forum. I was meeting a need for focus and attention. And then later, I was likely meeting a need for rest and connection when I left the building without remembering the keys that I had put in my pocket. So spending the minute or two that it took to do this reflection brought me peace of mind, self-forgiveness, and a chance to connect with that genuine regret for the needs I had not met, and with Harriet's likely anxiety and hassle for her missing her keys. By having done this, I was more available for the wedding than if I had stayed stuck in how bad and wrong I was. So this is how I can be in right relations with myself, beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing. Now, some of you may have noticed that I'm talking about transcending ideas of right and wrong in a sermon entitled, What's Right About Right Relations? That word right. It took me a while to realize this. Tricky. Well, wait a minute. What do I mean by right in right relations? Here, I think of it in relation like to the Buddhist Eightfold Path, which includes right intention, right action, and right speech. In this context, right reflects a sense of balance, equity. There's actually a Shaker song that captures it for me. Tammy.
Tis a gift to be simple, tis a gift to be free, tis a gift to come down where we ought to be. And when we find ourselves in the place just right, it will be in the valley of love and delight. When true simplicity is gained, to bow and to bend, we shan't be ashamed. To turn, turn, turn will be our delight, till by turning, turning, we come round right. When true simplicity is gained, to bow and to bend, we shan't be ashamed. To turn, turn, turn will be our delight, till by turning, turning we come round right.
I think that true simplicity is getting down to the heart of the matter. What is most important? What are the fundamental universal needs underneath our actions, strategies, plans, and judgments? What simple need can we find beneath the volatile feelings and elaborate stories? This exploration of what's really going on is the turning and turning that we do to come round right. After I reflect about the key incident, then I'm free. Free to make a different choice next time that honors more of my needs. Free to make the same choice and feel the regret and sorrow at not being able to meet all my needs. Here we are more than halfway through a sermon about right relations, and I haven't spoken about relations between people yet. But that's intentional because we need to look inside. We need to do our internal spiritual work, which will then manifest in new ways of relating with our fellow human beings, with animals, with the earth. Because we have a covenant of right relations, we have made a commitment to use this fellowship as practice ground. We come here to reflect during Sunday services about what brings meaning into our lives, what are our highest aspirations, and assess how we are meeting those aspirations or not. And this is a place where we can begin again in love as many times as we need to. It's not just Sunday services. It's coffee hour. It's circle suppers. It's committee meetings. Before a meeting, we could imagine the conversation that might accompany each agenda item. Notice, where might I get hooked? Notice what divisive debate I'm anticipating. Also, notice where my excitement rises. After a meeting, I could take time to reflect. How did that go? Where was I my best self? Was there a moment I would want to redo? Is there a moment where I feel proud about how skillful I was, or gratitude that I was able to remain curious? Maybe if I'm reading the minutes of a meeting, I remember a moment where I came to a new understanding of an issue because I listened with an open mind. I can celebrate how I met my need for learning, for connecting, for respecting another. If I'm looking at the agenda for an upcoming meeting and find myself going, oh no, here we're going to go, swirling around that issue again, I can notice my disappointment as I think we'll never get to make that change because that person on the committee is so personally invested in the current way of doing things that I'm actually not going to present my point of view. And then I can reflect how I'm honoring the value of consideration and kindness regarding this person, how I'm valuing harmony in the group, and I can acknowledge how I might not be honoring the value of effectiveness and creativity that's driving my desire for the change, and that I'm not honoring integrity if I'm actually withholding my perspective, and not really valuing kindness if I come to resent this person because I'm not willing to engage in conversation. So then I can consider options to honor more of my values, consider what this other person is valuing by taking their position. I might discover a new way. I might choose to forego the change, or I might champion the change, but I'll be aware that it's my choice, and I can be at peace with it. In any moment, I can notice the questions I ask myself. How can anyone be so inconsiderate? Well, this lets me know that consideration and kindness are important to me. What were they thinking? This lets me know that thoughtfulness and bringing reason and analysis to a situation is important to me. And maybe I could go back and actually answer the question, how could anyone be so inconsiderate? Well, they might be inconsiderate if they're distracted, if they're worrying about something, if they're in physical pain. Oh, yeah. What were they thinking? The authors of the book Crucial Conversations suggest a great question. Why would a reasonable, rational, decent person do that? See what answers come. It doesn't mean that we endorse other people's behaviors, but this is a way of getting my heart in a holy place, a holy place of curiosity and compassion. Our mind will answer the questions we give it. If we ask, what is wrong with me, or what is wrong with them, our mind will give us some answers. If we ask, what's really going on here? What's important to me about this? What's the core value or need? Our mind will give us those answers. These questions are simple but profound. Asking them brings great freedom from the constraints of right, wrong thinking. Our covenant of right relations calls us to bring this kind of attention to our relationships. It is a place to practice here together, and that is a gift. 'Tis the gift to be simple. 'Tis the gift to be free. 'Tis the gift to come down where we ought to be. And when we find ourselves in the place just right, 'twill be in the valley of love and delight. It will be in that field. Come and go with me to that land. Come and go with me to freedom, compassion, understanding. Come and go with me. So this is a different hymn than the number in your order of service.
Yes, ignore that number. You don't need a number.
You don't need a hymnal. You just need to listen to this lady.
I think you all know this, and if you don't, you'll catch on.